This is The Union, the intersection between people, apps, and AI. We'll inspire and challenge you as we ask questions, uncover insights, and share inspiring stories about digital ecosystems and automation.
Well, hey everyone, this is Scott, and that is Chris. Hi, Chris. Welcome to this episode of The Union Podcast. We're going to talk about building your own Gen AI system, your own Gen AI app, and why that may or may not be the greatest idea for your resources. So, Chris, I want to start off quickly. How is this different? Let's level set everyone that already builds apps, right? Yeah, I have an IT team. I've got resources that build and maintain my custom applications or modify my packaged applications. How is this different?
Okay, so you're actually adding a lot of complexity because this is something you're starting over with. And I think it's kind of important to let's think back to when you started in IT. Like years ago, we had, you know, client server apps, we had terminal apps, and then we started saying, okay, we're going to go to web apps and mobile. So we actually had to learn a whole new set of technologies to implement that. So the cool thing was IT loves that because we get to learn a whole bunch of new things, and they were emerging over time. So like we started out writing HTML and CGI bit, and we're like, okay, how do we get scalable? How do we get secure? And we changed the way we wrote. We don't write HTML anymore. We use frameworks like React and Angular and JavaScript to render the HTML. Well, realize those changes happened over years. Like you probably switched between one of those frameworks because there was new advantages that it would like render on mobile or wouldn't render on mobile, things like that. It was reactive web. You know, you might have started with Xamarin or Ionic and swapped to the other one because you said, I want this to actually power my mobile app. No one ever thinks about, oh, we did Spring and Stress and all this nonsense to actually persist the data. But realize the way we build an app today is because it's years of experience of what worked, what didn't work, and we found the frameworks that work for us as a company. So those technologies changed over years, new frameworks, new upgrades, we swapped. And the point is that was done over years, right? I mean, literally 10 or 15 years. But Gen AI and LLMs, those things are changing like rapidly. I mean, those changes are on steroids, if you will. I mean, we heard about the initial, like there was OpenAI 3, 3, 5, 4, you know, there's, you know, Gemini's just come out and it's got advantages of buffer sizes and how it's handling things. Like this technology is evolving very, very rapidly. So it's not like every 3 years we're going to get a monumental change in the Gen AI. It's a nascent market. It's a new market. We have never seen shifts in technology and advancements. We've talked about before that fight of who's better this month versus next month. But that type of change is going to be very disruptive. Traditionally, when we start a project, we pick, we're going to do React, we're going to use this database, we're going to use this persistence framework, the authorization. And over 9 months of development, that doesn't change. In this world, when we add AI, those technologies could quite honestly change. Like, this is not like the simple, we're going from, you know, model viewer controller web. This is, okay, everything's changing that we need to interact with. And so we're really saying, like, you need to think about a platform to develop on. So granted, you've got your, say, J2EE and .NET platforms. Those have provided us great advancements and stability in developing a web app and a mobile app. But those things don't change in the middle of our project. We pick a version. They're very mature. We're not in that place with all this cool Gen AI stuff. We're not there with all this like automation of AI in general. Those things are changing very rapidly, and it could actually change in the middle of your project. So it's a big thing. But think about, we're very comfortable with what we do. But quite honestly, we've been doing it for over 10 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, most likely it will change inside of your project, right? Because like you mentioned, like people will judge the efficacy of the different models and they leapfrog each other, and you can't wait around to pick the best one because the best one today is not going to be the best one tomorrow, right? As I was putting the paper together that we're reviewing, I've counted the major updates for OpenAI's ChatGPT-4, right? And it was like 29 updates in 14 months. I mean, imagine, you know, the regression for that type of thing. If you did have already a solution that was just answering questions, you know, the answers are going to differ based on, you know, those updates, right? The summarizations shrink, the context windows expand, you know, all that type of thing. But I mean, that is like, that's the real use case that people talk to us about, is I just want to ask it questions. You know, I need to serve my employees or customers better with, you know, better information. But, you know, that's just like one step. So if I'm going to use AI to do this, right, what is the difference between really just Q&A, and what does it mean, like, if I want to improve a process, right? Like, what comes out at the end, right? Because if I ask a question, I'm in the middle of doing something else. That's not the end result that I'm looking for.
Yeah, so what you're looking at is there's a big difference in, I'm just putting a UI in front of chat, or chat UI in front of the LLM. And that's what ChatGPT did in reality. It said, I'm just going to give you an interface to ask it questions, but you have to know how to prompt. You have to know how to stage your data. You have to know how to manage the context window itself. In reality, what we want is we want the ability for a user to actually get answers as part of an automated multi-step process. You want to use it as part of an automation to solve a problem. So that means all those things like, who are you? What's the context of the data? Am I getting the right data? Am I getting hallucinations? All those things actually need to be inside the AI module, not exposed to the user itself.
Yeah, imagine trying to teach a user, you know, all the prompt engineering techniques. That would, you would never get ahead of that, right?
No, I mean, like, they change so often, right? Like, we were looking at something the other day, and like the way you could ask for questions and get answers back actually changed from the way it worked the week before, because all those updates you set in the background.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to be much more adaptive in the way we interact with that technology and get answers and help scope it.
So what is, you know, obviously we have a platform to do this. What's the advantage of using a platform versus assembling all this together, right? Because it looks easy.
You know,
I go to a web interface, I ask a question, I get an answer, right? And even if I use an open source model, right, which is free, why do this? Like, why build your own?
Yeah. So if we look at, there's a lot of tooling around helping you provision the virtual machines, you know, set up a model, make that open source model available that just gives you APIs. And, you know, like those type of things, Databricks is really operationalized. How do you get the APIs available? And like there's things in Amazon and Azure to help you spin them up. But at that point, you just have an API. It's not going to be part of a business process. It's not solving the problem. And if it's generative AI, you've got questions back and forth. Maybe if it's actually categorizations or predictors, you've got learning, structured learning, things like that, training of the models. All those things have to happen there. So you realize a lot of what we figured out through, say, dealing with LLMs is we actually want retrieval augmented generation to get the right data and then use that. So the LLM becomes an editor and says, given these facts, give me an answer. Because a lot of times the LLMs, you know, they're going from billion to trillion parameters. They know more things, but they may not know things about your process. And so that whole concept of, okay, just because I have a model, I spun it up, you know, I can now use a tool to help me do some prompts. That's a long ways from actually integrating it into a business process that has the context of your specific data solving your problem and coming to an outcome. Like, did I get an answer and update it back in the system? Based on my answer, did I create a 6-step workflow to get this done? Things like that. So there's a big difference between raw code and actually the solution.
Yeah. I think that is the biggest leap of the people that I talk with. The biggest leap is I have to train a model on my data versus what you're explaining. No, just retrieve the data, feed that to the model, have the model generate or summarize the data for you versus you can't teach it, right? Because, you know, one, your data is moving every second. And so if you're training it, which you probably don't have the resources to do anyway, and that is deceptively expensive, right? If you're bringing this in-house, right? Your AWS or your data center or, you know, your self-hosting costs are going to be incredible. Because they look cheap, right? Like, what is a token? You know, tens of percentages of cents.
0.003 cents, 8 cents.
But, you know, it's like, okay, if I want to do this, how many tokens is that? Well, I mean, it varies every day, right?
Yeah. Are you then artificially limiting your tokens so you don't get a good answer?
Yeah, yeah. You're just trying to save money. Like when, so we had, John had, what was it, a llama model on a server in his closet?
Yeah.
Right? He just had the smallest server that would basically serve his testing needs, and it was $70,000, right?
Right.
I've read online, and I'll link to the article where somebody did some AWS cost just for the initial setup. It was like $5,000 a month to host a free LLM in AWS, right? Just all the compute costs. And then we took it a step further. We got a quote from a hardware vendor and said, okay, if I wanted to buy a server and put this into production, like, what kind of server would I need? And John got a quote. I think it was like $209,000 for one, right? So you'd need another for redundancy, and then you'd need another for pre-prod work, you know, for development and integration. I mean, that doesn't sound free, right? I mean, that sounds pretty expensive. And, you know, companies probably didn't budget that much, you know, this year for that type of thing.
Well, and realize you need several. You need two in production for backup. Then you need one in development and probably one in test.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're talking about hundreds of thousand dollars for a server and you need three or four of them, that's a big cost.
Yeah,
right?
That's $1 million of hardware just right there, right? Just for four of those servers. But
and then trust me, it has four power supplies and 1 million fans.
But you know, even doing that, and we talked about how the Gen AI services and the LLMs are leapfrogging each other, you really are at risk to basically like locking yourself into a position that is going to be very difficult to get out of, right? Like what would happen if you bet on one LLM and it just tanked, right? Like you just made a bad move. Like what would you do?
Oh, yeah, like we did testing of Llama versus Mistral, and we've done testing of Mistral versus Google Fawn UI2, like different open source ones, and then the actuals. And those, you know, as they say, your mileage will vary, but in reality, your projects, you may have a standard set of questions you need to answer or of type of things you need to retrieve, where it's table data, you know, entity data, you know, doing your retrieval augmented generation. That retrieval augmented generation stays the same. But when you handshake with the actual LLM, you know, obviously we know that 3.5 is way fast, 4.0 in OpenAI is giving us a better answer, but it takes us like 10 seconds, right? And we can get timeouts because of load, right? So you're not going to be able to know which one you're going to use until the 3 weeks before you go live, because you may need to do testing and change. And then 3 weeks after you go live, you're going to reevaluate. It's like, because we know that, you know, Gemini has come out. Maybe that's the one you want to go to. Or there will be another version of OpenAPI. There will be more versions of Gemini, right? So we know that it's like during the development lifecycle, it could change. So you need to make sure you use them, but you're not tightly coupled where you can't swap them. But realize that's not going to change once you go live. Because after you go live and you see how the actual users are asking questions, because their questions may not be as well directed as ours. Like I think about a question I want to ask it because I know what the data looks like. the users are going to be all over the place. So sometimes you're not going to know until you're in production that you need a different model to help with that.
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? That we like that we really didn't prepare for today, but the way the user will ask a question, because you're right, if you know what the API provides and you know what the data looks like a developer or a product manager or some business analyst is going to ask a very different question than than some other knowledge worker, right? Well, I'm kind of a tweener, right? So
yeah. Well, like when you take the stuff I write, you always ask the questions differently because you don't know the data model.
Right.
But you're in the middle because like you said, you're like not only is your hair tall and tweener, you're a tweener because you know how to prompt, like you become an expert in LLM prompting, but you may not know the data underneath it. So I'd be like, is that an employee or is that a team member? Like I know the keywords of how things are retrieved, and you're just gonna say, you know, part of the HR team, right? Things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Which kind of leads us into like other complexities that, you know, people may not be considering, right? So if the prompting is something that worries you, like one, you do not try and train people on prompt engineering. Like that just won't work, right? You can't even teach people how to use Microsoft Office or OneDrive or, you know, Google, blah, 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 right? They can't even do that. So prompt engineering, way more advanced. But what are some of the other complexities that people like realize after they get started? Like how, let's warn them of something that they should at least consider and look at.
Yeah, because people, they come into this thinking, oh, well, these LLMs have knowledge. You know, they've been updated, they've trained on data on the internet, but realize that, you know, the content ingestion is a lot more complicated than you think. Like getting data off of web pages, reading PDF files, reading, you know, what, like we found it's like there's a very big difference when reading a Word document with one column or two columns. Like, you know, are you making sure when you're ingesting the content to understand what it is, is it following those two columns? Is it realizing there's a table that has information on it? It's a multimodal, and there's a title that describes it. Columns of data. Like we found, like one of the things that just was like, oh yeah, makes perfect sense, is merged cells in Excel. Everybody's like, oh, Excel's rows and columns. Well, a comma separated list is rows and columns. But we format things with group cells and group headers and all that so that multiple levels of headers give context, right? So actually ingesting that and making sense of it, so retrieval augmented generation, all those things, it's actually a lot more work than you think to actually, because you've got corner cases and how those things work. The other thing is you're talking about your company's data. When you've traditionally wrote a web application, the first thing you do is like, who's my roles? Who's the security? Who can get to what web pages or transactions, who has view only, who has update access, right? Those things don't go away. It's just now you're saying, based on who you are, I'm a manager in North America or I'm an employee in Canada. I'm a manager in Canada and an employee in the US. How do those things change your data privacy, what you can see? How do you curate what you see because you see something that's country specific? Those things don't go away. You still have to apply those to the data that you want users to have access to, okay? And then once you've done that, say you give them a great answer. Like, you know, we always give the example, if I'm in Canada and I ask about holidays in Canada, or I'm a U.S. employee, I ask about holidays, in November, they're different. We have Thanksgiving, they have different holidays there. But then you want the AI to be not just be, here's a dumb answer, trigger than automation. It's like, would you like to take vacation days around those holidays? Like, you know, and do you have an automation to complement these things so that it's just not, you got an answer to someone, now they go through a, you know, a very manual process of doing other things. How do you augment that with automation to streamline all the things they want to do?
Yeah, because you do want it to do something, right? Because that's how you just gain speed, right? But, it reminds me, someone showed us their ChatGPT, app, right? They built this front end, they put their documents in it, and like the guy was super proud. And it was slick. Yep. I mean, he did a good job, right? But I think his idea of a finished product was just short of, you know, it was definitely short of the next step, right? When we say,
yeah,
you know, the AI must do something. But, you know, he was able to ask a question, and then the LLM responded with basically all the stuff you just described, right? It responded with four more questions, like, okay, yep, who are you? You know, I need more context. You know, what are you really trying to do? Like, do you have access to this data? And then we said, okay, that's what we're talking about. Like, we're going to do that in the background. Like, don't force that into the user, because that's the whole prompt engineering thing, right? Like, they're not going to be able to do it. Like, you can't have a prompt that big. Like,
yep.
Imagine if the Canadian employee, like, I'm a Canadian employee. I'm looking for our holiday schedule. I'd like to see if we have, you know, July 4th off, which you don't, right? Because it's a U.S. holiday. But Thanksgiving are two different days, right? In yep. in U.S. and in Canada. You can't teach people to prompt with that much context. You just need to do it for them. So that yes. is, I mean, the guy did a great job, and I loved it. It was cool. It was just short of what we talk about, because we've seen, you know, just like better examples, right? But
yeah.
So people are being successful with it. It will iterate, but, you know, imagine getting that far and then the LLM updates, right?
Yeah.
So what, in terms of all the software development projects, all the backlogs, you know, everyone has maintenance items and bugs to fix, right?
Yep.
So, you know, depending on who you talk to, 80% of the total cost of your app is in the maintenance lifecycle. What type of maintenance overhead are these Gen AI apps going to produce?
So it's very different. So like I talked about at the beginning, we had changes, say, in the Java stack or in persistence frameworks and how we rendered HTML web pages. Those changes happened every year. So there's maintenance with upgrading those. And you may do that once a year. You may do that every 3 years when it goes out of support. You know, so it's like my hair, very low maintenance. It's just there. Now, with Gen AI, it is iterating rapidly. Like you said, 20-something upgrades. You're going to get lots of changes to an existing LLM model, but you're going to get another one that is even stronger and better, that could have a different API structure, because there's no standardization in that. It's like Scott's hair. High maintenance because we have different APIs for each engine. You prompt each engine differently, and then you need to know how to take the results of each one differently and present them back to the user, right? So there's each one is separate, and you're going to want to swap. It's not just that it changed. Like, I've seen how responses are changing between patches over a weekend, but then there's actually the new version, Those are going to come out quarterly, if not more often. So are you prepared to actually take that part of the code and actually be constantly upgrading it? And that team never goes away, because we're always going to get another one. I mean, it's for the, you know, compute's going to get faster, tokens will get more. It's going to do more things. We're going to go from billion to trillion models, things like that. But still, I would say for the next 3 years, there's going to be huge innovation here. It's not going to stabilize like we've seen in like UI frameworks and things like that. Those things are still going to be rapidly evolving, and you're going to want to look at quarterly updates to those, at least over the next 3 years.
Yeah, imagine when all the all the models can read images better.
Mm-hmm. Multimodal is changing everything.
Yeah, no one's pasting pictures in it right now, but when they do, right? Imagine what's going to happen. That's going to be crazy.
Well, there's an API change. How are you giving the data right now? We're giving text. So there's an API change of how do we give it an image? What type of image? And then when you get a response back, are you getting text? Are you getting text with a picture to describe it, right? So that's all plumbing changes, if you will, because your APIs are changing because we're dealing with new data types.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, it's going to change for like pictures and stills. It's going to change for videos. It's changed for audio snips. It's cool, but realize those things we need a protective layer against. We have to decouple our application from those changes very gracefully.
So, Chris, like, obviously people are going to have to do this themselves, right? They have their own knowledge of their own proprietary processes. That's their advantage or their IP competitive advantage. But what they don't need to be doing is building the infrastructure for this type of, you know, generative AI, like interactive solution or app or automation. So walk us through like some of the things that they may, you know, they may not be considering. We talked about the skilled resources, the prompt engineering, the hardware costs, you know, the token costs, like all of those they're probably thinking about, but like walk us through like why you should build this with a platform like Krista versus assembling this on your own.
Yep. So if you think about, we now use J2EE app servers, we use C#.net to get that accelerator, because those developers have solved a lot of the problems of like multi-threading, database access, and, you know, authentication, you know, things like that, state management. Using Chris as a platform is going to do the same thing. Literally, I have 100 developers working on the platform. Some are focused on user interface and conversational design. Some are worked on like the ability to connect and adapt to systems and have automated workflows. And part of them are literally focused on how do we deal with connecting to multiple LLMs and seamlessly changing them. So what happens is you have APIs, like right now they're text in, text out. We know how to change the way we prompt to get to that data. But in reality, we're about to see a big change with multimodal. So people are going to say, here's pictures, but I want the images to come back. Here's an image. I want to understand the data on that image itself. So that's all API changes. So instead of you having a team of developers that never goes away worrying about those things, that's my team's problem. We give you the platform that we're constantly upgrading so that if you want to swap to Gemini from 3.5 or 4.0 of OpenAPI, it's you switch. We already know how to connect to them. We know how to modify prompts. We know how to modify responses that come back. The JSON's always different, right? There's no standard for that. And then when those LLMs are ready for accepting, say, images, where it can read the words on a picture and help derive something, those things will be there. So our developers are focused on that part, where you can focus on the business app and what am I trying to accomplish? And, you know, that way you can swap and always be up to date. It's not like, oh, I need 6 months to refactor everything, which in developer land, refactor means I'm going to rewrite it all, let's face it, because I need to change getting to images, right? Or movies, things like that. So that's where you want Krista to handle that stuff the same way you would expect an app platform to handle database threading and session management. Krista to handle that. And then that way you have the ability to swap, you know, the type of LLM in the background. Right now we can swap the database behind the J2EF server. We probably wouldn't know the difference, right? Because the frameworks handle that. So that's where we want to be. It's not that we're not going to build the apps. We're going to focus on solving the business problem and interacting with the users, not all the math of connecting those things together.
Yeah. And you want to be able to do that quickly, right? Because if, you know, like you were saying, there's 100 developers working on Krista. You know, having those AI skilled resources, obviously it's a supply and demand problem.
Yep.
There's just not enough supply for the demand, and it's going to get more and more expensive. And then, like, does the developers may, you know, come and go, right? As they get better offers, just like the LLMs update. So I think you're putting yourself into a bad spot, right? So that'd be working on the strategy instead. We do explain all of this in a new paper that we've written that Chris and I have worked on, The Illusion of Simplicity, it's called. So please, you know, give that a read. Ask us questions on, you know, maybe how do you automate this, or how would I apply AI with this? There's a lot of cool examples in the paper. Chris, anything that you want to close with?
No, it's like excited. If y'all want to comment about this or reach out, happy to explain to you and actually show you the advantage you're going to get in building your app using Krista to handle those parts versus yourself.
Perfect, perfect. Thanks, Chris, and thanks, everyone. Until next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Union. I hope it was insightful and caused you to think about how you can influence technical advancements at your company. Please subscribe to The Union podcast series on your favorite podcast player to listen to past and future episodes. If you have a question for any of us or have a suggestion for the show, please email me at scott@christasoft.com. Thanks for listening.